We said Dave's going to be speaking on step 11, which is sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Dave.
That's great. Thank you. Hi, I'm Dave, I'm an alcoholic. And it occurs to me that when you stand up here for this many weeks in a row, you'd think that people actually liked you, but that may not be the case after all. As I'm getting close to the end, I don't see anybody asking me to repeat it or anything. But it struck me, there was a time that I was leading someplace, and I think it was in Meadville, and there was someone new there, and I ended up speaking for whatever, 40 minutes or whatever it was, and after at the comments, she said, "Why did you hog the whole meeting?" You know. And if anybody's been in a discussion meeting with me, you might actually think that that's the truth. So I don't mean to hog it, but I got a big kick out of that. So anyway, and this is kind of like therapy, honestly. You know, showing up on a weekly basis and talking about myself, it's a good therapy, whether you want to hear it or not. So it's even better. And I didn't have to pay any of you. I've done this where I had to pay people. I think that when we talk about step 11, we're talking about the step that kind of unites all of the steps. We got here because of the process of it. And it is likely the most, it's a beautiful step. It is. It calls us to be better human beings. It says, listen, through a little bit of prayer and meditation and a lot of faith and a power greater than yourself, you're going to make your life better. And by the way, you're going to make other people around you better. And that's where I wanted to be. I don't know about anybody else. I'm guessing we're pretty similar in that regard. We all did some damage. I don't know if you were a tornado. I think I was just a brisk breeze, but there might be people that tell me I was a little bit wilder than that. But I wasn't an F5 or anything, you know. But honestly, the damage that we do is never done, I don't think, most of the time with bad intentions. I didn't have any bad intentions. It was never what I was looking to do. I never went out of my way to, that I knew of, that was going to create harm for somebody else. I had this overdeveloped sense of fairness that I carried around all the time. And I think that you probably know what that means. I want justice for all of you. I just wanted mercy for me. You know, so there's an overdeveloped sense of, I want the right things to be done, but I want to be forgiven of all the things that I might have done without question and without regard to whether or not you really wanted to forgive me. And so when I went through this program and when I bought into the idea of this program, when you finally get to this step, I should have already made my amends. I should have already done the best that I could with that, knowing full well that I'm going to have to return to this on a regular basis. But now I'm at steps that everybody wants to call the maintenance steps. I'm going to stay right here at this step. This is something I'm going to exercise on a daily basis, and I'm going to get better at it. Now, I wish that was true. I wish I could tell you that my meditation is just perfect, that I have a routine that I swear by, and I would guess if you people would do it, you'd be better people. I don't. I don't have... I do, listen, my prayer life is pretty good. I don't wake up in the morning and not pray. I don't go to bed at night and not pray. I don't get up and stand up here without praying. I don't. I need help. But meditation's never been very good for me. And I understand people that can do it well. I blame it on the fact that I have tinnitus. And so when it gets real quiet, all I hear is this noise in my head. That's really just laziness. But I do struggle with it. And I understand if people do, because it's not easy to let everything flow out of your mind and sit quietly. I was listening to, I think it was I've listened to several people today, but I think it was Penny, who said she had monkey mind. And I thought, oh yeah, that makes sense to me. Nothing sits still for any length of time. She's gone on to other thoughts and bouncing on things. And I did too, and I still do. But I see the importance of it. So, the little red book, is not permitted in AA meetings. That's what the doctor of AA over there said, and I immediately thought I'm going to bring it up. So here we are with, frankly, the most beautiful prayer that I've ever heard. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that there where are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek to comfort rather than be comforted, to understand than be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven, it is by dying that one is awakened to eternal life. Amen. That is a great prayer. I'm not a religious guy. I've probably said this more than times than you need to hear. I wasn't brought up with a religion. I went to Sunday school in a Methodist church because my parents could watch us go to church from their bedroom window. That's the truth. My brothers were much better attending that than I was. I was not attracted to religion. I was attracted to a spiritual life. Even as a person who was not actively engaged in any kind of religion or studying religions or studying spirituality, I had experiences like lots and lots of people have with prayer that worked even when I didn't know what I was doing. I had things happen to me. I had intuitive thoughts, and my life got better as a result of I don't know what. Because I just happened to say it out loud, because I asked for help when I needed help, and it actually came. Now, I will tell you that in that regard, there was lots of times when I forgot how I got the help. So something turned out much better than I anticipated it was going to, or something was successful when I thought it would fail, all because of some intuitive thought and actions. At the conclusion of that, when people would say, well, you know, that worked out pretty well, I would frankly say, thank you very much. And I would then forget exactly where I should have been laying, where I should have been putting the blame for it working. Obviously, the credit. And I did that with regularity. So throughout my latter part of my teens and through college and into my work life, I frankly had things happen to me or for me that I couldn't explain. All as a result of prayer. And I got here, and I started seeing the difference and the importance of it. And when I read this 11th step, and it tells me, you know, prayer and meditation is all about acceptance and faith, then I really started to think, well, maybe I should pay more attention to this and make this a little more part of my daily life. So eventually I did. So I get to a point where I can't take credit for things anymore. Now, this goes all the way back to the first step if you think about it. This is really finding the power at this point. This is knowing that you don't have the power and then finding it in the first two steps. It always goes right back to that. I mean, that's a foundational step of this program. If I am not powerless, then I am never going to get this. I have to be powerless. I have to be in a place where something greater than myself is showing me the exit ramp. Because if I don't have that, then it's all up to me. And what I've discovered in through observation and experience in my life is that I don't do this very well by myself. I don't do a recovery at all by myself. I ask for help no matter what. Now, probably what I had to learn was actually asking for help. Now, I know this happens, and sometimes it happens to men more than it does to women, just because that's what I hear. That there's a refusal to ask for help, there's a refusal to come to the powerlessness of this, and using prayer and meditation is a way of not just enhancing your life, but actually creating life in terms of what's going to be best for you and what's going to be best for whomever it is that contacts with you or has contact with you. Generally, family members or work people, other relationships that you have in your life. And let's face it, if I don't pray, or if I have this, you know, I don't know if it ever happens to people, but it does happen to me when I discovered that for a week I haven't prayed. And I thought, oh, you know, that it's so quick to fall away from what's best for me. And I don't know that it's a week. Sometimes I forget how long it's been. But because I've been doing it since I was a kid, I don't expect it's for any length of time. And even though, like I said, I wasn't religious by any means, nor am I still, that prayer life really meant something to me. And so as I grew in this program, or as I matured in this program, and that only happens by listening to you folks and to doing the readings that we have to do and deep prayer, then I my life become better as a direct result of it. So anyway, I got a couple of things that I wrote. You know, I don't know if I told this. You know, in terms of faith, the story, and I might have already said, and sorry if I did, but here it goes. I work with a guy who is just a peach. He's actually the guy that kind of assisted me into rehab, and he was one of my heroes. I mean, it was, you know, we have AA heroes. This guy wasn't in the program. This is a guy that knew about the program and helped me get into it. So I was with him one day, and we're talking about whether God exists or not, you know. And although I didn't really have that issue, here's what he said to me. He said, well, if you don't think that God exists, then grow me a blade of grass. And I thought, that's not all that hard. I can fit the ground, I can spray the seed out there, I can cover it up with straw and it'll grow, right? I'll give it a little water. He said, yeah, but you don't get the seed. Yeah, you don't get the seed. And so I'm not going to grow a blade of grass unless there's a seed. And I didn't create the seed, and I can't create the seed. And in our book, it talks about you know, where we founder sometimes when we can't find our way, and it really has to do with whether or not we have this faith or not. You know, it really does. It really comes down to that. By the way, this is all my opinion. But I hear myself kind of preaching instead of talking, and I apologize for that. But I can only say what has happened to me over the years and what my deep and abiding love of this 11th step means to me. I think that once I got here, and I got here in the right way, I was able to experience my life differently. I was able to see things differently. I was able to experience things differently. I was able to put, for the very first time in my life, I was able to put myself in a position where I was not the most important person in the room. Now, I know that people say, well, I'm not much, but I'm all I think about. And I think there's some notoriety to that. But to be honest with you, until I could put myself in a position where I was not the person I was praying for specifically, was I ever going to get better? And it says it right in there. It says, listen, you're going to be better if your prayers aren't specifically about you. You're going to be better if you meditate and give some consideration to what and how you got here and how you can stay here. You're going to be better if you can ask for God's will instead of your will. And then it goes on into conversations about how do I tell the difference between my will and God's will. Well, listen, if it doesn't involve me directly, probably it's not my will. If it's all about me, I'm guessing it's my will. But, you know, because this program is a program, you know, of assistance, we ask each other for help. It encourages us to have a conversation and said, listen, if you can't determine whether it's you rationalizing your behavior or whether it's the will of God, have a conversation with people, because we all have a better idea of what's going on from the outside in instead of from the inside out sometimes. And I said this last week, I know I did, that I don't know how I appear to others. I like to think that I'm introspective enough or reflective enough that I'm going to understand it. But honest to God, I don't. But people can tell me. And what I want to do is make sure that I am open to that. So honesty and open-mindedness and willingness becomes a very, very large part of this as we get to this part of... I mean, it is throughout. But now... Listen, I think this is the last step in some regard. The next one is, give it away, man. You got to give it away. Now, there's a lot more to it than that. But we are here at this step when it's telling us the same thing. And I heard this. I've listened to a lot of different people on this, in the last week. And it always comes back to the same themes of casting up a balance sheet. Now, you think about the 10th step being that, but it's really, it's part of the 11th step too. Or the pausing part. Everybody thinks, well, that's the 10th step, right? No, actually, it's the 11th step. And I had to be reminded of that by reading it. And I thought, well, I'd just forgotten that. But there is some kind of symbiosis, of course, between that 10th and 11th step, and there should be. There's a symbiosis between all of the steps, and it's the one right next to it. And it's the one that says, listen, we're going to take care of this. We're going to make sure that you understand that you're a vulnerable person, that you're going to make mistakes, and when you make mistakes, make sure that you ask for forgiveness of that, or you forgive somebody who has done a wrong turn to you. And then we swing right into the 11th step where we're asking ourselves, am I worthy of making sure that I have a conscious contact with the God of my understanding? It that's really that important. Can I do anything without a God consciousness? Nope. This is all about God consciousness. But it was from the first step on. It was just not that we understood it at the time. And that's what I found out about maturing in this program. And that makes me sound like I'm mature. I'm not. I'm just, I've been around here a while. And so I've come to understand in a greater way what faith means to me, what asking for forgiveness means to me, what making that amend means to me. I didn't really have a handle on that until I could get far enough along the road. I know that when I talked about the 8th and 9th step, I never even mentioned the promises. Not because I didn't want to, it's because my mouth runneth over. I'm a big fan of the promises. Right? My home group, by the way, is the promises meeting. It's on Saturday mornings. It starts at 9 o'clock. It's the Fairview United Methodist Church. It is the best home group in West County. Yeah, I'll say it right here at the legacy meeting. I don't care. I'm no longer Kevin's favorite speaker, which in 2 weeks I won't be anyway. I don't know who's following me, but they'll be his favorite speaker. Here's what I've done with folks, and here's what I do with myself. When I am in a place where I'm up against it, and I don't know why. I don't know about anybody else, but this happens to me. I've talked about this. I have to track back. I have to find out what it is. I have to remove it. And this is how it happens. So I'm in a meeting, and I am just hopelessly, disconnected from what is going on around me. And I'm not sure why. I can't remember why, honestly. It wasn't the meeting. It wasn't the people in the meeting. It was just me, and I didn't know what it was. And here's what I discovered. It must have been something with the 12 and 12, because I had the 12 and 12 with me. And I must have had the big book too, because I started reciting the third step prayer. I said the third step prayer. I have to read them because I can never read. I'm sorry, I cannot memorize worth of crap. I've read them a lot, but still can't. And then I thought I'll do the seventh step prayer, and then I did the serenity prayer, but I did the whole poem, not just the first three stanzas. It's just gorgeous. I know that you've all read it, and it's outstanding. And then I did what I just already read, the 11th step prayer, the prayer of Saint Francis. And I did it again. And then I did it again. I'm in this meeting and I'm doing this. And all of a sudden, that channel opened for me. That was one of the times, and I can tell you, I felt this. It wasn't just, I mean, I literally physically felt that I had removed some kind of obstruction between myself and the God of my understanding. It was amazing. It was amazing. And so after that worked for me, I thought, well, heck, I'll keep doing that, you know, whenever I get an opportunity or whenever. And so I've talked to people. I'm talking to you now. I would suggest that if you find yourself in a position where, you know, prayer, your prayers are not what you think they should be, or somehow you're up against an unknown foe, that those four prayers done time and again. One guy said to me, well, what if it doesn't work? I said, do it again, it'll work. I mean, because that's what prayer will do. You know, I know that there's answers to prayers. We all know that. We wouldn't be sitting here with a room full of miracles. We were people who would have probably been gone by now. Some of the younger ones, maybe not, but it would. Any of us that have any age on us, we're probably living on borrowed time, and grateful for it. So, anyway, I'm kind of getting off track. Sorry. You could call me Reverend if you want to. Hey, I'll be honest with you. There was a time in the midst of my heaviest drinking that I had decided. I watched a lot of Sunday morning preachers. You know, the Rex Humbard, if you remember Rex, and the one guy that cried, Jimmy Swaggart, and you know, I watched those guys because they were entertaining. And my wife and children had gone off to church, and I was sitting watching church on TV with Jimmy Swaggart, and just for material, not for content, just for material. And because I would then preach at the local bar, and of course, you know, people are drunk, they think things are funny every day, they forget you did it yesterday, you know. So I worked this thing over, and it was the Church of Dave, of course. I didn't want to get too far out there. I wasn't like First Church of Dave or anything. It wasn't Holy Dave or Saint Dave or anything like that. It was just Church of Dave. And of course I passed the hat, right? I spent time in the bar, I was passing the hat, and you get 15 cents or a drink chip. You'd get a drink chip or something. So then I tried to sell deaconships. That was the deal. You could be a lifetime deacon for $50. It was a good deal. I mean, this was a good deal. The church really didn't work out so well. But you could always set on your resume, I was a deacon in the Church of Dave. And I'd back you up. So how we got here, how I got here, and what I do to stay here, is I do this. I come to meetings. I talk about myself frequently. I listen as other people speak. I look for the love and tolerance that I hear people talk about in this room. That's how I learn. The nice thing about getting a little bit older and also being retired is that I have a lot more time to actually read and to study on some of this stuff where I, you know, work would have gotten in my way before, or other things that, you know, to a lesser or greater extent, I wasn't doing the same things that I've done over the last 4 years, which is spend a lot of time thinking about how this actually works. Because although it's worked for me wonderfully for the last 33 plus years, I really wanted to start understanding a little bit better about what that meant. And being able to sit up here and talk about it, and whether it's flowing correctly or not, is really something I don't take much notice to. I'm speaking from my heart, and it's what I've experienced in this program and what has been important for me. And I hope that that's of some value to people, but if it misses the mark entirely, I understand that. And it's not, and nobody has bad intentions. I'm just doing what I think is what people want to hear about how we each get here and how we stay here. So I needed, and I've said this in this earlier, I said that the pillars of my recovery are built on honesty, and there are honesty and humility. So right away you got a shaky foundation, because you only have two pillars, not three or four, right? So But I've been saying this thing literally for years. So I think, well, okay, I'm not gonna add on to it because everybody will think, no, look at him, he's showing off because he has honesty and humility, which of course would not be true. But the deal was, what I needed the most is what I had to build my best recovery on. And my best recovery is gonna be built on rigorous honesty and humility. And frankly, that's been a struggle. Not that I'm not happy and happy, joyous, and free. I'm living a great life. But humility is not something that has come to me with relative ease. It's not something that you have to earn this. And I think that I'm on the right track. And then I, you know, take credit for it. And then that, of course, blows everything. You know, it's like one of those guys when they interview him after whatever game that he just got done, boxing match or whatever, and they put a microphone in his face and they want to thank God, and then they want to tell you how humble they are. And that's what always reminds me that this is how I have to attack this. I have to remember that not everybody wants to hear what I have to say. I know, I'm surprised too. People don't want my opinion necessarily. I don't have to respond to every single stimulus that I come across. I don't have to do that. And what I found myself doing, this is a while ago, of course, but I kept thinking, boy, I wish I could get credit for the things I don't say. You know? I should get credit for this. There must be something. I'm hoping that God is making this mark for me, because I'm not so sure that what I think that I ought to be able to receive through prayer and meditation, I still have to do a lot of work to get there. Prayer gives me the direction I need. Meditation allows me to relax if I can get there. But prayer gives me the direction that I need. And so that's the 11th step. I mean, I got here the same way everybody did. I went through 10 first. If I don't do those steps in order, then I don't get the rewards of this. And of course, the reward is to get here, but also to get here in a way that's going to be of some value to myself and to others. I can't imagine living a different life. I don't want to imagine living a different life. You know, people die from this disease every day, every single day. Ugly, hurtful deaths. Some of them just because they've destroyed their bodies, and some of them because they've destroyed their minds. And I spent 5 years as an executive director for Crawford County Drug and Alcohol. It's a little nonprofit, and I was there for 5 years. And all through the very first part of the government's awareness of the opioid crisis, which had been going on since 96, but the government caught up in 2014. Sounds about right. And so they inundated us with a lot of money to deal with the opioid crisis. And let me tell you, it's a horrible thing. And what's going on now is even worse. You know, they're mixing fentanyl with horse tranquilizers. People are dying with necrosis. I mean, it's just a never-ending problem that we can't seem to ever get on top of. And you hear these stories, and I heard them, and I thought, oh my God, this is just horrible. And frankly, they didn't really start paying attention until white kids in the suburban died. That's the truth. When urban people were dying, it really wasn't that big a deal. That's the absolute truth. You got white kids dying in suburbia. That changed everything. That's when the money started showing up. And it's unfortunate, but an absolute truth. And so I watched all this happen, did what my part was, hopefully did okay, and never, ever relinquished the idea of this. Alcohol's the king. Alcohol's king. If there's 100,000 people dying of opioid overdose, there's several hundred thousand people dying of alcohol every year. That's why I can stand here and tell you without any equivocation, I would not have survived. But this program saved my life. It did absolutely save my life. And I don't know how to give thanks for that. You know, this is the best way I know how. To say in a room full of people who already know this, I'm going to say it again. Be thankful for each day. Be thankful for each day. And I have 5 grandchildren that I get to see, that I get to be part of their lives, that I love. I would have never seen this. It would have never been part of my life. And even if I'd managed to survive, my daughter would have never, ever wanted me near her children anyway. And I could never say that that was the wrong thing. How grateful can I be for this day? I don't know. There's more love and tolerance of people, which is our code, that comes from my heart at this point than I would have ever had under any other circumstance. I'm never going to be perfect at this. I have this 11th step to give me guidance. I have the other 10 to give me promise. I'm going to live the best life that I can because you allowed me to do this. This program allowed me to do this. 87 years now, or 88 years? Yeah, 88 years this year that AA come into existence. And talk about providence. Talk about the grace of God. There's just these two drunks having a conversation in a gatehouse. Harriet Cyberling had let them in. 5 hours later, they had basically created the germ of AA. You know, it was there. That was the genesis of this. This is remarkable. I'm in West County, Erie, 88 years later, being deeply grateful for the God of my understanding and the work of two men and all that went before me. Thank you for all of this. Thank you. I would encourage everybody to get the little red book.
Thank you, Dave.
No, thank you. Thank you very much.
So now we would like to ask if anybody has any questions for Dave.
Hey, Dave. Eric, alcoholic.
Hey, Eric.
Simple question, kind of.
Good.
Would you recommend meditating in the morning or at night?
Yeah,
and why?
Morning.
Yes.
Morning. I think that it's the only time it works for me. When it works for me, it's in the morning. Nighttime, I'm scattered, but one thing or another. But morning works for me better than evenings.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Do it tonight. No, wait till the morning.
Who would like to ask a question next?
I really didn't think you'd have anything to say.
I know. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be a miracle?
Yeah. No, I'm happy to hear it.
Congratulations, alcoholic. So my question is, you know, we ask in the 11th step, too much of that going around, that we seek through prayer and meditation.
Mm.
But we also have to have the power to carry it out.
Yeah.
So my question is, because I can get lazy and I can pray and meditate,
mm-hmm.
but doesn't necessarily mean I take the action to carry it out.
That's right.
So
that's right.
How do you motivate yourself to carry it out?
Well, and listen, we're reminded constantly that without action, none of this really is worth the effort. That's a little extreme, but honestly, motivation has to come from inside, of course, and I have to work at this. If I find myself in a position where I'm not comfortable with my prayer life, then I'm not paying attention. That's when I have to go back to living in the now, because I'm obviously, if that's the case, then I'm not living where I should be living. I'm not being aware of what's going on right now. So I want to think that the way I get to it is finally understanding that without an adequate prayer life, I'm not going to go forward. And action is the only way I can go forward. And sometimes it's limited, you know. I mean, you know, we get to the 12th step and we want to know what our service really is. And sometimes that's just showing up, you know. And so likely it's when I go to more meetings. I have more conversations. I have those blessings. I have like four guys a week that come and talk. The one guy we talked yesterday, he brought a Drop the Rock, also not an AA publication. We're going to start going through it, but we decided to talk about football instead. It was a great conversation. We'll get to the Drop the Rock. We'll get to the 6th and 7th. But I mean, that's a blessing that I'm, you know, deeply grateful for on a regular basis. And those guys, you know, I sponsor people, and they're really sponsoring me. You know, this is really a two-way street. I've never once had somebody I sponsored that was not part of my own recovery. That's how this works, right? It's one drunk talking to another, and if I take on more of that responsibility, then I'm not sharing, then I'm being selfish. I'm going on and on, Gretchen. Thanks for the question.
Thanks, Dave, for sharing again tonight. Leslie, alcoholic, and here's my question: exactly what is the Little Red Book, and why did you bring it with you tonight?
Well, I will tell you. First of all, the Little Red Book has been a book that's been around for a long time. It's a discussion of the steps, and honestly, I forget who put it together. But come on now, don't look at me like that. The original edition was 1946, and Dr. Bob said, "Best wishes for continued success for the folks who put this together." But I'll tell you why I brought it. It was a conversation in Step 11, and there was a thing said that I've also read in the Big Book that says, "You have not been cured of alcoholism. You're in recovery. You're not cured of alcoholism." And I thought, that's a distinction that I want to make sure that if I had a chance, I would bring that up. That I'm not cured of anything. I haven't had a drink for a long time, and neither of you, but that doesn't mean that we're cured of alcoholism. It's a disease that I'm going to carry with me the rest of my life. And today, I'm grateful for it. I don't say I'm a deeply grateful recovering alcoholic, because people really get pissed when you say things like that. People are new in the room going like, "Yeah, right, whatever, buddy." You don't think so, though. That's okay.
I was going to say thank you, because I'd heard of it, and I knew it was kind of an old, you know, it was a real old school thing. And I'd heard, when I was new, old timers then would talk about it, and somehow it just got by me. So thank you for mentioning
it. You're welcome, and thank you for the question.
It's one of those things that, like, no one talks about, and someone did, so thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you for the question.
Thanks, Dave. My name's Trevor. I'm an alcoholic.
Trevor.
I really enjoyed this and all the other...
Well, thank you. It's very kind.
Yeah. If you could just kind of expand or maybe put into context something that you said tonight early on, which I really appreciate you talking about. It's something that's come to me as well, I think, but not immediately. It didn't come like in the first few years. It's more of a later realization. And it was when you talked about the part where you had the, I guess you could say, graces or the things that happened to you that you could attribute to God.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, if you don't mind, would you kind of talk a little bit, like, if you're putting this into context for new people, you know, about that, about how you came to Alcoholics Anonymous and those first years where you kind of like I did first, I didn't immediately jump into the steps and sponsorship and so on.
No, I didn't either.
But how did that, would you put that on?
Sure.
Would you, when you're doing that, would you say that was part of that grace of God?
Absolutely. Okay. So let me step back and tell you that, as I said, I mentioned earlier, that I had a lot of good things happen to me through no fault of my own, trust me. This was prayer, because I found myself in a tight spot. And it wasn't just I'm going to get in trouble for something. That wasn't it. It was moreover something, usually it was work-related, so I would have been in my 20s. When I found myself up against something that seemed insurmountable, that I didn't know what to say, and I didn't know how to say it, and I would pray about it in earnest, asking for help, and I'd get it. And I was able to say and to demonstrate that I knew what I was supposed to do and go ahead and do that, whether it was project-based or it was just conversations or speaking in front of people, which was never comfortable to me until I got to AA, when I could talk about myself. So I had a number of circumstances like that. And I could look back on those, Trevor, and say, those are by the grace of God. These are things that happened to me as a direct result. Some of it was family related. It was just a matter of, I'll give you a really good example of this. I moved to York County. I was not in recovery yet. I was working down there. And my son, who was kind of a hard guy to deal with sometimes, ran away. We'd only lived in this home for less than a month. And he ran away. Oh, we don't know where we're at, much less where we know to find him. I didn't know. And so, you know, we ended up calling the cops, and we're frantic. This is a 9-year-old. It's starting to get dark. And I stopped, and I can remember this, you know, as plain as day, saying, God, I need to know where he's at. He needs help. I can't do anything. I drove right to where he's at. I swear to God, he was in a bowling alley. I didn't even know the bowling alley is there. I drove straight to it. My son being the guy that he was nine years old, he had taken a whole bunch of our change, and he was over there bowling. You know? He wasn't mad. He just decided to go bowling. And he had just left the house. And we were frantic, and I'm scared to death about what might have happened to him. And through prayer, he shows up. He looks at me and says, where you been? Not with you. Not with you. But that happened. And those things happened to me more than enough times that I knew that asking for help was going to be... And obviously, there was lots of times I asked for things that I wanted specifically and didn't get them. Then a guy told me one time, you know, there's three answers to prayers. You know, yes, no, and not yet. Or maybe, you know. And so I learned through that. So to finish up with what you were saying, Trevor, I knew that was part of my experience. That's part of what I understood coming into AA. What I didn't get was that to remember how I got there, how those things happened. I didn't come into AA willingly. I come in kicking and screaming. I spent 30 days in a rehab, and I was miserable every single day, and I made sure everybody around me was miserable at the same time. And they were trying to, you know, be better, and I wasn't. But it took a while, as you mentioned, for me to finally put together those earlier experiences with what I needed to do to recover from alcoholism. That without a God of my understanding, without a higher power, I was not going to get better. And then when those experiences started to come back to me, when I started having a better understanding of those experiences, then I started to be able to apply it to my recovery life. So in recovery, I know that I mentioned this before, but I'm going to say it again. There was an instance when I was 2 years sober, when I was touched by whatever I was touched by, and had this overwhelming sense of peace and connectivity. I had never experienced anything like that before. It was almost as if it was an out-of-body experience still in my body. I never, ever saw the world like that. Never, ever did I see the kind of peace and love and compassion that I felt everybody. I can't explain the connectivity. And what occurred to me was, oh, that's serenity. That's what they keep talking about. That's serenity. And it lasted for like 3 days. And I thought, oh, I'm on this easy street. I'm going to be here forever. And then I took credit for it. It left that moment. But when they talk about chasing the dragon with the opioids or with the heroin, this is it. I want to chase that the rest of my life. There was nothing better than that. I've had those experiences again, but quite honestly, that's where I know where humility has to be part of my life. I can only get there if I live the right life. And trust me, it's worth getting there. And if you've experienced it, you know exactly what I mean. So thank you for the question, Trevor. I probably took it a little bit too far, but you know, I am a little talkative, so.
What is your favorite definition of humility, if you have one?
Well,
and yeah. Second question, how do you work towards humility?
Well, what I don't do, Paige, is pray for it. I do, but I mean, I didn't early on. Man, talk about being tested. Boy, that was ugly. Pray for patience and tolerance and humility all at the same time and end up getting bowled over by something. But my favorite, listen, I again, I don't memorize things, but if you recall, Dr. Bob had on his desk, his favorite description of humility. And I don't know it off the top of my head or the back of it. But that's it. I said this one time. I thought humility was doing, and I said this to a guy, I said, doing good things for good people without the expectation of being thanked. And he looked at me and he said, why do they have to be good people? And I thought, oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. So anyway, I'm sorry, what was the other?
How do you work towards
humility? Oh, listen, I really, first of all, it's part of my prayers. It really and truly is. It's always part of it. I read stories where humility or unexpected grace is part of it, because I think that if I ever experience the kind of humility that I'm talking about, it's going to be because I'm not asking or I'm not thinking about it anymore. You know, that's the deal. I don't know about you. I know people who have this natural affinity to be humble. It's not me. I'm deeply, deeply jealous of those people. But I work for it, and honestly, on every day. Every day, I recognize by my actions, by my personality, by the things that I know that I've said and continue to say, and I don't mean to, but I do, and that's when the 10th step comes in handy. I ask for help. And honestly, I'm more humble than I was. You're not allowed to say that either. I'm still working at it, Paige. But thank you. Thank you so much for being here and for asking a question.
All right, Dave. I think that does it.
Thank you.